This episode of Right at the Fork is brought to you by Zupan's Markets,
where Ciao Italia is still going on, and that's a special event at Zupan's. Just go. There's sampling going on and tasting throughout the week and throughout the all three stores. It's pretty cool. They feature all the products that they import from Italy and some that they make as well. It's really cool at Zupan's, and it happens all this month. I believe they also have some events too. You're going to want to look in to see what's going on in Cellar Z when you check into Zupans.com.
Yeah. In fact, while you're there, check out their What's for Dinner menu, which is basically great recipes, items you can pick up at your local Zupans. They'll go home and create a gourmet meal. And because it is Ciao Italia, a lot of Italian focused meals available for you at Zupans.com. Also on sale through April 2nd, house-made Italian porchetta. Pick that up at your local Zupans.
Very good. What's better than porchetta?
I can't think of many things that are better than that.
Well, especially if you're in the mood for something delicious and rich, it's available at Zupan's.
Three locations to serve you. You've got McAdam, West Burnside, and Lake Oswego. And of course, we recommend people go where?
Zupans.com.
All right, here it is. Time once again. It's Portland's Food Scene Podcast. It's Right at the Fork with your host, Chris Angelus from Portland Food Adventures. And I'm co-host, Court Johnson.
Court, you were at like Giants Media Day today. That's exciting. I would love that. I once went to spring training for the Mets, but what happened at with Giants Media Day?
It's exactly what you would think it was. They had different people from the organization available. You got to tour around Oracle Park, which you have visited back when it was probably AT&T something or other, right? When you did
right. I can't keep up with what the names are these days.
If you haven't been to Oracle Park, there's a reason why it's considered one of the best ballparks in America. It's right on the water. It's beautiful. Today was a decent day. And yeah, it was kind of, I don't know. It was fun. I enjoyed it, but there was a lot of boring media stuff too.
Oh, well, yeah, but boring media stuff at a baseball park in March, right, as baseball season about to start. Yeah. That's okay.
It can't be
bad. I rated AT&T at the time, the number two, my number two ballpark at the time.
Oh, okay.
My number one was PNC in Pittsburgh.
Well, and you had said, based on your visit, to AT&T, however many years ago it was, that when I go there that I should, if they still have them, go after the garlic fries. And that is,
of course, they still have.
That is still like the number one thing to get at the ballpark.
Yeah, no, they're world famous, and of course, Gilroy, California, is nearby with all the garlic farms.
Yep.
And so, those are great, and the aroma of garlic wafts throughout the ballpark during the game.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I love that, but
it's not very baseball-y.
Well, yeah, but it's food. Yeah. So we're just trying to tie it all together here at the podcast. While we're tying it together, we ask everybody to subscribe and share our podcast with everybody so we can help grow it even further in our 11th year of doing this. And I think we get a little credit for doing this for 11 years.
Sure.
Weekly. Yes. Weekly. You know, that's the first question. Whenever I tell anybody we've been doing this podcast for 11 years, always they go, how often is it?
Every week.
And I'm like, weekly.
Yeah.
So, well, we do cheat a little bit. We have a classic episode here and there.
Started cheating a little bit.
Right. So, well, we didn't just start. We've been cheating for a long time.
That's true. That's true. This is a peek behind the curtains right now.
Well, we also thought that, that we've found that 50% of our downloads are back into our archives longer than a month or two ago. So we thought, let's share some of the old ones and make it easy for people and make it a little easier for us to give us a little break once in a while.
That's true. And when you have over 400 episodes that people have to get through, like a lot of it gets kind of lost. And so it's our opportunity to bring things back to the top.
Right. So there you go. And I believe we'll have one next week too. Yeah. So, and you know what? Let's invite a little interaction here. Two things. If anybody has an episode they think was exceptional and they'd like to see it brought back, let us know. You know, we go back to 2014.
Yeah.
So let us know, because, you know, you and I just roll the dice. We just look back and go, oh, that one was good.
That was a good one. Yep.
Right. So we do that. So let us know. We'll, and secondly,
we'll give you full credit, by the way. You suggest we'll give you full credit.
And we'll give you full credit for this, too. If you have a guest idea for us, let us know. And I will just say, just make sure they're kind of interesting people. So, it's not based on how well they can cook pork. That's not our criteria for a guest. We want people who have stories to tell, are interesting. Mm-hmm. And, I just went to the dentist this morning. I don't need to pull any more teeth. So,
no, there you go.
So, interesting guests, which, by the way, oh, wait, Court, I wanted to talk quickly about what?
Oh, yeah. Well, we were talking about Ciao Italia as Zupans, but people have a chance to say ciao in Italia with you this year, right?
Right. We have two spots left to our trip to Sardinia. And so someone's going to grab them. We have 10 other people going. We're going to take a dozen with Austria Ensign. And I was able to preview that trip a few months ago, and it is absolutely beautiful. We do 4 days on the west side of the island, then 4 on the east. And one is kind of old city, and the other is beautiful resort and water oriented. So it's really cool. Check out portlandfoodadventures.com. The itinerary is there, and we're continuing to adjust it just a little bit, as we are doing with our itinerary to southern Spain with the folks from Urdaneta. That would be Javier Canteras, his wife JL, and Andre Barnes, who all of them have been featured on Right at the Fork in the past, and we invite you to go back and listen to those. But we'll be doing Andalusia in October 2nd to the, I think it's the 11th. But check out that. That's a super trip, because we will have done 4 trips to Basque Country with those folks, and they've been great. They've been really well received, and we had some requests to go elsewhere, and we do have room to southern Spain, which would include Sevilla, Granada, Malaga, and a few points in between, and some of Chef Javi's favorite places that his family has been taking to for years, and that he has gone with that restaurant. Those folks take the employees of Urdaneta to Spain every year and do field trips. Who does that? And so we're going to benefit from those field trips with their knowledge and what they've learned and what they love. And that's all available to you too at portlandfoodadventures.com or by writing me directly, and you can find my email address there, or there's a form, however you want to do it. I'd love to pencil you in for one of these trips. That's you, Court, and everybody else when I say you.
All right. Understood.
Yes. Well, I hope everybody else does. Yeah. And we'd love to have a few Right at the Fork listeners along with us. So today's episode, speaking of interesting guests who have something to say, it's Kai Ku from the newly opened Warsegai in the former Taqueria Nueve space. Also, some people may remember the Beaker and Flask space, which as a bar, rounded up restaurant of the year kudos from the Oregonian, I think it was. It might have been Portland Monthly back, must have been 12, 13 years ago. Mm-hmm. But at any rate, it's beautiful space, and Warsegai is great. It's approachable Asian food. You know, Chef Kai is Korean. However, some people may know him from Danwai Canting. I never know if I'm pronouncing these things correctly. And I'm going to make a blanket statement. to all these folks, would you name your restaurants things that are easy to spell and easy to say and easy to remember? So, but Dunway Canting, I remember, but I don't know if it's Danway or whatever.
That sounds right.
Worcester, I think I have correct. Mm-hmm. I misspelled last week when I sent you the intro. I misspelled Xiao Ye. Mm-hmm. And then we had to redo that. So, and I think I somewhere along the way I complained about the spell, you know, these names, because I can't. They're not that easy.
Yeah, make it easier for Chris, everybody.
Exactly, that's the thing. Make it easier for me, because. But I would bet if I have trouble with some, others do sure. too. So, but I'm not a restaurant consultant. I'm just a diner, and I'm, you know, I can display my idiocy in full. Blown color here on the podcast.
There, so it is. Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks. Thanks for confirming. Well. But at any rate, I can pronounce Warsugai, and that is Warsugai. And just to make sure everybody knows, we're trying to help. And so, This would be the third time we've had Kai on the podcast.
That's right.
When he opened his first restaurant, I suggest going back to listen to that, because we cover his childhood and his roots and how he got into wanting to be a chef in deeper detail there than we do here. And then he did do some consulting for a concept in New York, and we talked to him about that. And now he's still consulting in Seattle while he's opening his restaurant. So other people may have known him years back at Clark Lewis. He was instrumental in running that restaurant for quite a while. And then, you know, Bruce Carey Restaurants moved over to Blue Hour. And so he's a seasoned chef in Portland and a really nice guy. I like him. So I think other people, anybody who's listening to this podcast, will like him too right now.
Right at the Fork is brought to you by Zupan's Markets. Unsurpassed quality from the best meats and wines to local baked goods, fresh flowers, and an extensive craft beer selection. Step into Zupan's and be inspired for your next meal. Food-loving customers and local chefs know that Zupan's is the place to find the very best Northwest bounty in Portland. West Burnside, McAdam, and Lake Oswego. Local and family-owned for over 40 years. Zupan's Markets. Ringside Steakhouse. For over 78 years, Ringside has been providing the best steaks and has been the home of the beacon of great hospitality in Portland. Make a reservation today at ringsidesteakhouse.com. And while you're there, sign up for their mailing list to be the first to find out about exciting specials and events going on at Portland's beloved Hallmark restaurant, Ringside Steakhouse. And by Portland Food Adventures. It's your opportunity to travel to the world's most celebrated food destinations with Right at the Fork host Chris Angelis and some of his favorite chef friends. Check out PortlandFoodAdventures.com for exciting and delicious itineraries to Spain, Italy, and elsewhere. Stay in great hotels, eat incredible food, and leave the planning to Portland Food Adventures.
So hello, Kai. It's great to see you. It's great to see someone with less hair than I have. It's always good.
Yeah, it's always good.
But it's by choice for you. It's by choice for you.
Right.
So I was reflecting this morning. This would be the third time you've come on the podcast. Now we're in year 11, so to have someone three times is not unusual. But what it does mean is we like you, and I think. You're a fun, interesting guest, which is not always the case. You know, sometimes it can be like pulling teeth a little bit. Yeah. Not always, but we have an occasional time where it's like, okay. So I liken it to when I used to do speed dating when I was in my dating days.
Yeah.
And one of those 8-minute dates could last 3 minutes. Seems like it was 3 minutes, or it could seem like it lasted a week.
Right.
You know, 8 minutes could seem like forever if it wasn't going well. So at any rate, it goes well with you. We had you, your first time with us was in 2019. about 6 months before all hell broke loose in Portland and the world. And then we had you again when you were in Brooklyn. What happened with that project?
Well, basically, so I was in New York for a year, and we started the Incubator Kitchen, and I was planning on staying a little bit longer there, but, you know, due to, I guess you could say, differences in the vision of the project, we parted ways amicably, but yeah, it was one hell of a ride opening up a restaurant in New York and, you know, just getting everything together in a city where I never lived before. So, they opened a food hall, you know, out of the Incubator Kitchen. And, so that's in downtown Brooklyn now. I think doing, you know, pretty well.
Good. So, and, you have had a lot of experiences. You know, you don't look like you've had that many. You're not wrinkled. You got a good complexion. I think there's hair there. I can see it. I don't think you've shaved it today yet.
No, not today.
So, you're right. So you've got hair, but you've had a lot of experiences. You know, you ran, Clark Lewis for quite a while, a Portland institution, another former institution, Blue Hour, which is where we met. Years ago. And I know you had experience before that because you didn't just step into Clark Lewis and say, hey, let me run this show. And then, you know, you had Dunway Canting. I'm always want to make sure I'm pronouncing that correctly. And that's why you were on the podcast the first time. And then you had the project there. And now you've opened a beautiful restaurant, Warsegai, on actually it's Washington and Sandy, is that right?
We're at 7th and Washington. Sandy is the main road that passes by, correct?
Right. Oh, I see what you're talking about. So it's cool. It's the former Taqueria Nueve, and before that, my brain is trying to catch up with my memory. With Benny and Kevin's place, which I just talked about yesterday.
Beaker and Flask, I believe.
Beaker and Flask. Yes. I have Beaker. I still have Beaker and Flask coasters.
They were
cardboard coasters.
Really?
Yeah, I still have one. I showed Kevin that, and he was like, "Oh my god!" But they're kind of not in perfect condition. But I remember going to that restaurant when it had become. It was just named Restaurant of the Year. And it wasn't really a restaurant. It was a bar. It was a very Portlandy thing. But Benny, you know, he became famous under Vitaly Paley's tutelage and on Iron Chef, and then became Portland famous there on its own. So that's cool. Yeah. The building has quite a bit of history, and you have done wonderful things with it. One of the things that struck me was how beautiful the experiences there. So I commend you for that. Where'd you come up? Who do you have design skills?
I do not. I'm the first one to admit that. Design skills as far as like designing a dining room, I have ideas. I'm definitely not the best at doing it. But we had a good team of people, including my business partner, Alvin, who's actually my brother-in-law as well. A couple of other people just, you know, kind of contributing to the full, like, I guess, motif of the dining room. So, but I can't take credit for that.
It looks nice. That's some risky business. That's some risky business doing things with your brother-in-law. Things don't go well. Somewhere there's a problem in the family, right? That's a little risky.
There could be. We're pretty confident, you know, that we're going to be doing just fine. So,
I didn't mean the success of the restaurant. I just meant, you know, agreements on things and so forth, and getting along, from a harmony standpoint. I did not mean to cast any doubt on the future success of Warsegai, but I just thought, you know, anything that you're doing with family has risks.
Yeah. So it can get complicated. Yeah. But I think we're going to be okay.
Good. And you're doing well. What has it been, a month?
It's actually been a little bit over a month. We officially opened on January 31. So.
Okay. All right. So before we get too far into other things, why don't you go over for the uninitiated what Warsaguy is all about, what your vision was, maybe how it's transformed a little bit, because that might happen once you open the doors, right?
100%.
So talk a little bit about what people can expect.
Okay. Well, Warsaguy is a concept that, you know, I've been developing off and on for probably about 4 years. But I've always wanted to, you know, open a, not necessarily just an Asian restaurant, but a very like Portland Asian restaurant. And I didn't have the name initially, just kind of the idea of the concept, but, you know, I was born and raised here in Portland and went out to, you know, dinner, lunch a lot growing up with my parents and my sister, with friends as well. And, you know, just experienced a lot of Asian food that I loved and had that experience.
Can we pause for a second for you to say what those restaurants were as you grew up, that if they're still around, but so there are a lot of people who've lived in Portland like you who might want to hear where your experience came from.
Yeah. So some of them would include places like, I'll list some of the closed places first. One of them was a place in Beaverton called Lin's China Jade, which was a Korean Chinese restaurant. Another one was Shanghai Noble House, which actually, I don't know what the restaurant is now, but it was down on McAdam, where the Pier 1 Imports building is down there, at John's Landing.
Mm-hmm.
Another one, which is actually still open, is a Japanese restaurant in Beaverton called Ikinohana, which has been there forever, out off of Murray Boulevard. And I think that is some of the main places that kind of, you know, inspired my vision for Warsaguy. We would go have a lot of family events there, birthdays, you know, graduation celebrations, or just like a random Tuesday night, you know, going out to eat. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of wanted to relay that experience growing up into food that people would, you know, not only obviously taste good, but also like kind of, you know, whether it does transport them or not, but like kind of give that old school feel of, you know, old Asian Portland style of food.
So it's a little bit American Asian. So unlike Dunhuai Canting, you were doing authentic Beijing cuisine, right. I believe, right? You could correct me. But this is different, and it kind of reminds me a little, we were talking a little bit before I hit record, but I went last night to Shaoya. I always question, why would you name it something that's, you have to really think hard to pronounce, but good for them. I think it's good. I had it down and then I kind of forgot it, but he's calling that first American, what is he calling it? Oh my God. Now here I have a picture of it. I'm going to get it. Hold on.
All right.
See, this is the thing. So it's not immediately available in one's brain, right? So, oh, he's calling it first generation American food.
Okay.
So they're making no bones about the fact that this is, you know, with a name like that, you're expecting very Asian, and it's not. So you're doing something that is more Asian. It definitely, when we dined there the other couple of weeks ago, and it was, there's no doubt about it. You feel like it's Asian, but what you're saying is it's a little more Americanized. And unlike Dunhuai, it's not as spicy, right? There is some spicy.
Right.
There are spicy dishes, but it's not.
Right.
You don't have to call the fire department.
Exactly. And, you know, that being said, there will be spicy dishes as our menu changes. Spice is definitely not like a major contributor to the profile of the menu.
Right. Yeah. Unlike Denway. So, yeah. Interesting that you're kind of, yes, you want to make it comfortable for Portlanders. And, you mm-hmm. know, when you grew up, there weren't as many people who moved in here to eat. And right. now there are. So you've got local, you've got natives, and you've got transplants here as well, like me. So, but as I said, you got a beautiful space. You have a really nice menu. The Warsegai dish, right? That's fried chicken.
Yeah.
Was
yep.
delicious. And, you know, I've always said I have a very short food memory. So I do remember the tofu was awesome. I think that was one of my favorite dishes.
With the miso caramel.
So, yes, it was really good. Nice. So, but yeah, no, it's great. The service was fantastic. As I told you that night, I was really impressed with, you were in your first week at the time, and I was really impressed, or first or second, with how good the service was and how well taken care of we were.
Well, so I appreciate that. Yeah, and the thing too with Warsegai is we're obviously still learning, you know, just kind of the ropes on opening a restaurant like this in Portland, because, you know, it's very, I feel like it's very new for the market, and, you know, our service, we didn't want it to be too stuffy. You know, we want people to feel comfortable, whether you're, you know, on a date night or coming in with, you know, a family of six, right? Like, we want the restaurant to be for everyone. So, we try to balance that with, you know, the level of the food, level of service, and make it really comfortable for everyone that walks in.
Well, let me say, because I'm one who's not averse to rants once in a while, but in a positive way for your restaurant, I mentioned this to you. I'm going to say, for any operators listening to this, because I think we do have a lot of industry folks, yeah. one of the things that struck me that night was we had a lot of food, and we got takeout boxes. And this is important to me. So when you're talking about stuffy service or not, that's not even important. But just when you want takeout, I really love the fact that I didn't get boxes thrown on the table for us to scrape all the food into the boxes.
Yeah.
It's an important part of the service experience that someone actually took the trouble. I don't remember her name. You would probably know. But to come over and have a conversation with us while she was scraping, putting all the food in the boxes for us, yeah. boxed it up, inserted the proper crazy boxy parts in the proper parts to get it to close,
yeah.
and then left us with that done. That doesn't seem like a lot to do, just to form an impression in a diner's mind that, oh, they're going a little above and beyond, right? It's not going above and beyond throwing a box on the table. It right. isn't. So I don't know if you do that all the time, but she was great. And I really know, I mean, those are the little things that are appreciated and noted. And, you know, in Portland, they're very, no one has a problem with throwing a box down for you and walking away.
Yep. Agreed. So yeah, we're doing what we can, you know? So it's, like I said, you know, it's a learning curve for us. I mean, we're, you know, by far, we are very humbled at the, you know, response we've gotten so far. Really appreciate all the support from just not only customers, but from restaurant community. We've had a lot of industry people come through, you know, in the last month. Yeah, we're really excited to be here.
You have to have a lot of friends in the industry. You've been in the city for a long time, and you've been in a number of great restaurants. Yeah, you got to have a lot of people pulling for you out there.
Yeah, I hope so.
Well, yeah, you were commanding kitchens, so you never know if you made a few enemies along the way. Yeah. But so, you know, you've done so many things, and you've been a lot of places. Can you share with us some of the main things that you have learned that go into a successful restaurant? Like, for instance, you know, opening this restaurant, what are some of the key things that you have discovered along the way that, the basics that go into making sure that Warsegai is going to be successful?
That's a great question. I think first and foremost, it's the people. Without, you know, you could be the most amazing chef or the most amazing manager, you know, just at the top of your game, but without the right people helping you in that structure, it is impossible, especially in an industry like the restaurant industry where, you know, there's so many moving parts. It is so key to find the right people to...
But yes, that's easy to say.
Yeah.
It's not so easy to do. And I heard someone recently say, well, I've never heard anybody say, well, we're successful, but our people suck. So, right. And you've got a new restaurant and that you don't know, right? When you open it, they may seem well in training and soft yeah. openings and all that stuff. But you don't really know that you've got a great team. And you probably, I would imagine, a year from now, you're going to be a little happier with your team than you may be now because you will have gone through a little bit of turnover
right.
and found some new people. So I don't know. So I don't mean to challenge you, but everybody says team is important and the people are important. Mm-hmm. But let's face it, nowadays in this market, it's challenging to find good people, right? You're competing with a lot of restaurants that are in a slim market for staff.
For sure, yeah. And I think that's also key, you know, with the people that you find is to really be, you know, to able to not only just train, but to actually, you know, get them on the same page as far as for your vision of the restaurant and what the plan is, not only in the moment, but really to plan ahead. It's amazing what reactions you can get from, you know, people that work for you. If you are very open and, you know, are very like just touching base on not only, hey, you work this shift this day, but this is where we want to be 3 months from now. And you'd be very surprised at, you know, just the appreciation and also kind of the motivation that that kind of communication will bring to a restaurant staff, whether it's front or back of house. You know, and I'm right. not saying everybody will appreciate that, but it definitely right. helps. Yeah.
Right. And when you're training, you're only in a position to talk a little bit and show a little bit and then get a head nod. Okay, I get it. But then you don't know until actual practice happens and you know, to see how it really plays out. Because anybody can nod and say, I get it. I'm going to do that. right. But then, right. you know.
Yeah.
As with any relationship, everybody has good intentions, but it's the actual execution that's 100%. A little different. Well, so that's good. And then, so,
yeah.
you know, you, you're in a very, you're a block or two from where you used to be at Dunway mm-hmm. Canting. So I think you, and I remember at the time you were really happy about that location. This is a good location. It's a proven location
yep.
too. So you've got that going, and then there's so many other things that go into running a restaurant and a successful restaurant, and you got to have a lot of pieces in place. So, yeah, you've had a little experience, so I think you got a leg up on someone who's just opening their, you know, in their first rodeo.
Right, right.
Correct.
Yeah, we lucked out with the location. When we found it, it was still – listed, but it wasn't on, you know, a lot of brokers' radars. So we were the first, I think, kind of major concept to go in and really put in like a proposal that the landlord considered. So yeah, we definitely lucked out getting the space. But
how long after T9 closed were you? How long after T9 closed were you on it? Because once everybody hears that that's closing and you've got, mm-hmm. you know, entrepreneurs out there who want to open restaurants, they have to be right on that immediately, correct? Like,
correct.
Let's go check that out.
Right. So when T9, their official close date, we were already in the process of, you know, negotiating lease and signing papers about probably, I would say, 2 months before they closed. So, yeah.
And so how did you get a leg up on that? How did you, is that you've had a good real estate broker who was on top of it and knew?
No, I was actually just scouting locations online, and I just happened to randomly see this address where it said, you know, restaurant availability, you know, in like 30 days or whatever. And it had the address, but it didn't have the name of anything, you know? So I Google mapped it, 720 Southeast Washington. And the building came up, and I was like, okay, so I know Rum Club's probably not closing. The Viscount, which is a dance studio, is, you know, highly unlikely. And so I just sent an email, and the landlord, you know, contacted me within 24 hours and was like, if you want to take a look, I can meet you tomorrow. So it basically was just that. And then we committed.
So you were a chef and a restaurateur with a concept without a location. So you'd been sitting on that. You said it was 4 years in the making. So you were actively at the point where you were like, I want to open this. And you did. So were you, you know, months ago, just without a gig, thinking this is what I want to do and let me find a place, and it took a little while? Or were you consulting somewhere along the way? What was your situation?
No, I'm actually, I guess I should have mentioned this at the beginning, but I'm actually the culinary director. I still have a job as well in Seattle that I'm up there part-time as a culinary director for a meal delivery service called Cook Unity.
Okay, I think you were doing that last time.
Yeah.
Okay, so you weren't without a gig. You were not gigless. Yep. You were looking to expand your horizons.
Yeah, exactly. Good. Add on another project.
Good. How many more do you want to add on? How many more? How much more can you handle?
Ask me in 6 months.
Okay.
Yeah.
See how that goes. So, have you found? So with that and this, have you found work-life balance? Are you still trying to accomplish it in life? What is work-life balance for you?
Work-life balance, that's a hard question. I don't know. I mean, I love this business. And, you know, for me, I think balance with work and life is just, it's kind of what you define it as. So I don't feel like I have like a huge like variance. For me, I mean, the most important thing is being able to spend time with my son, right? As far as my personal
time. How old's your son now?
He is 10. He's going to be 11 in May, which is crazy. Yeah,
that's a little bit. And, you know, you don't want to have lost opportunities with a 10, 11-year-old.
Right. So,
because they're not going to be 10 and 11 again.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, as far as, you know, work life, I mean, I love this business, so I don't feel like I'm losing anything, you know, working, you know, doing ordering or working the line, what have you, managing, you know, wine inventory, which is, as a restaurant owner, even a chef, that's something that, you know, could come up. So, but yeah, I mean, it's good.
So what do you love? So what I found is, over the years, getting to know chefs, you have to love the business because it's all consuming. And you're also, it's not as though you can make a big killing, I guess some do, in Portland, Oregon, in a restaurant, and then retire with your Mercedes and your villa and wherever it might be. Yeah. That's not happening. The margins are pretty slim. We all know that. What is it about the business that drives you so much?
I think a lot of it is just the creativity aspect of the business. As far as the food goes, I love cooking, you know, whether it is food at Worsugai or, you know, making dinner at home, on a Thursday night. I just love the craft and the, you know, work that goes into making delicious food. I would say that's probably my main motivation. But after that, I mean, you know, it's the challenge of running a restaurant. I mean, whether it's, you know, sourcing or, you know, managing a busy Saturday night service, like all of the moving pieces that could actually be detrimental if something goes wrong is also part of the excitement, because that challenge is, it's always there, you know, it's constant, like never.
Right. It's not something you can just set up a system and then just press, you know, it's not like a plane where you just press autopilot and it goes. There's no way. Things happen. Yep. Things change. You're at the mercy of a staff who somebody's sick or doesn't show up. Yep. Yeah, it's not that easy. But see, the difference between the reason I've never been a chef, I worked in the restaurant industry specifically once in my life, is because I would view that as, I don't want to do that. I don't want those challenges all the time. I want things to be easier. So, you know, did something in your earlier life happen? And I'm guessing this for all chefs, for you to view that with, you know, eagerness to attack each day as opposed to dread, which I think I would have the dread of, oh my God, more shit's going to happen today.
No, I don't think anything, you know, earlier in my life really had an effect on it. You know, when I started cooking, you know, as I learned more and more about the industry and just the amount of work that it took and the complexities of, you know, just the management of the restaurants in general, I think I just, you know, I've always enjoyed it, whether good or bad. You know, I mean, it's not always rainbows and ponies, but you got to work hard. You know, you got to think on your feet. You got to be quick. And it's just, you know, it's a fun business, I guess. That was what it comes down to.
Well, yeah, and I would imagine that some people have retired and it stopped being fun for them after a while. Yeah. I mean, I'm one that if I do the same thing for years and years and years, I'm like, okay, I'd like to do something else. But everybody's not programmed the same, and some people like, you know, the same types of things. Is there anything that you thought when you were a kid you wanted to do that you didn't do because you became, you know, you went to the restaurant industry and became a chef, that sometimes you look back on and think, oh man, what if I'd done that? Where would I be there?
You know what? I have never been asked that before. I think I remember when I was like 10, I told somebody that I wanted to be a policeman. But other than that, I mean, you know, what 10-year-old boy doesn't? Either that or a fireman.
I wanted to be a pilot, so that never happened.
Yeah,
I just like the aerial views. I think that was
that's a cool gig. Yeah.
So I don't. So do you ever think, how would you want to be a policeman now?
No.
Yeah,
definitely not.
Knowing what you, not in Portland for sure. Yeah. Maybe in Portland in, you know, 2005. I don't know, but not. But today's Portland would be a little rough, I think.
Yeah.
So, and you know, let's take a commercial break for a message from Ringside right now. But I wanted to, when we come back, let's talk about, you know, you're a longtime Portlander. Let's talk about your impressions of the city from a restaurateur's standpoint and just a resident, a citizen, both of them, where Portland stands right now. We'll be right back with Kai Ku of Warsegai. This is Chris Angelus. Join us in a second. Stay with us.
Pausing just a moment here, Chris, to talk about one of our favorite places to eat in Portland, an institution. It's Ringside Steakhouse.
I don't know if they've hit 80 years yet or...
Oh, they have.
Coming up on it, yes.
Over 80 years.
Right. Over 80 years. You tell me, what else is there? We won't even mention another restaurant. It's Ringside's time, but nobody does service like Ringside. And, you know, when you're around for 80 years, you have gone through all the trends over the years, and you've gone through a burgeoning food scene where there's every shiny new thing going on, and you're still one of the favorite places to go in Portland. Ringside on West Burnside. They've got a lot of cool things going on. Of course, their famous onion rings and the best steaks you can possibly imagine. But also, I understand they have some great non-alcoholic beverages available in the bar or in the restaurant. I don't know if anybody's ever met Jimmy there, but he's been in the bar for years, and he'll make you a fantastic non-alcoholic beverage. You can order three dots and a wink, or maybe even a Sacred Emily. And you can go to the website, ringsidesteakhouse.com, to check out what that's all about.
Also, don't forget, every single Monday night, it's Prime Rib Monday, a three-course dinner where you get mixed greens to start. You get your prime rib that comes along with horseradish and Yorkshire pudding. And then, of course, you top all of that off with the creme brulee. Can't be beat every Monday night.
That's a good deal. And a good deal also is to get some Ringside merchandise. That is pretty cool. You can have, they give hats, t-shirts, and what I think everybody, every home cook should have is a, or every home person who likes, loves to grill.
Yeah.
A Ringside apron. It looks really cool. Go to the website and check that out.
I'm actually imagining myself this summer out on the back deck with my Ringside Steakhouse apron on while grilling up my own steaks.
Right. And everybody's going to think you're an expert at, on the grill right off the bat.
Right.
So you got to prove yourself.
Yep. You can make reservations for your next visit to Ringside Steakhouse on their website, which is ringsidesteakhouse.com, or you can use the Open Table app.
All right. We're back with Kai. This is the third time you've been on the podcast. That's a good one. You've got a few more to set the record. So I can't suggest you continue to open new restaurants. And then the odd thing is about this podcast is it's really about you and your background. We don't like to talk about restaurants, and here's why. This is a perfect example. So we're going to have three episodes with you. One was as a consultant, one was when you opened Dunway, and now this. So what is, other than the fact that on the episode, the first episode where you joined us, you did talk about Dunway, right? If we make that the focus, there's absolutely no reason for anybody to listen to that podcast again, because it's not open anymore.
Oh, right.
So it's not about restaurants. It's not about events. We really want people to so they can go in and eat at Warsaguy, and I encourage them to do it because it's great, and learn about your food. So talking about it, for me, isn't that exciting, because I'd rather, for many reasons, have people go in and try it. But you can't go in the restaurant and learn who Kai is and where you came from and what your motivations are and what you think about the business. That's what we're more interested in. So that being said, let's just talk about Portland a little bit, because that's an evergreen topic that will change over time. Oh my God, Portland has changed a lot over the last few years.
Yeah, it definitely
has. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do you think about where it is today with regard to, you know, the drug problems and homelessness and how it affects your business and your life in Portland?
Well, I think, you know, there's this national perception, I think less so now, but, you know, especially during COVID, during, like, you know, when we had a lot of just really like intense stuff going on downtown with the protests and whatnot, that there's this perception that Portland is somehow this city on fire, you know? And I don't feel that way at all. I think that, you know, the media's like portrayal of Portland just got out of hand and everyone just kind of ran with it for a couple of years. But for me, you know, Portland has always been, it's the town where I was born, where I grew up. So I've always loved this city, whether, you know, good times in life or bad times, it's always been home, even when I'm not living here. So I feel like, you know, it's evolved. And I think that Portland is now changing, especially now coming out of the COVID pandemic, into, you know, what it's going to grow into in the future. And nobody knows yet what the exact, you know, evolution is going to be. But as far as for me, I think that it's a great city to be in, not only for restaurants, but, you know, just to live in general.
Was there a period there where you were frustrated with it, though, and a little bit turned off by it? Like, I know this is just me. I'm different. I just had a friend, my butcher friend from Tuscany, Andrea, was in town. Well, he has tattooed on his arm some of his favorite graffiti from around the world.
Really?
So he, yeah. So, and I was complaining about the graffiti in Portland, and then, you know, realized he didn't understand everything I was saying. We could understand about 70% of each other. But so he celebrates it. I drive through Portland and I'm on I-5 and I see, I can't even read, I don't need to read the signs anymore, but just aesthetically, the signs are now have been hit with graffiti. And, you know, it's a little bit of disgust. I get pissed off and I don't know who to be more pissed off at. Well, that's not productive to be pissed off, but to be upset with it, with the people who did it. And it's like, fuck, you needed to do that. You absolutely had to do that. Now, I don't understand the mind of a graffiti artist, but, or the city that's just sort of has let things go enough where they can get away with that. And they, even if they got caught red-handed doing it, probably nothing would happen. So do you ever feel that, you know, with tents and graffiti?
I get what you're saying, you know. You know, I feel like the, especially obviously in the city, like downtown, even close in Southeast. I mean, you know, there's a lot of social issues that, you know, the city is not taking care of, as they should be. But you know, at the end of the day, I mean, I think that the city of Portland is doing what it can. You know, it's a hard situation, I think, for all involved. Whether you're
right, and it's not just Portland; it's pretty much the whole West Coast and some other larger cities elsewhere. But it's not an easy fix. But it's, you know, it's, no matter what, it's been at least 4 years of shit going on that is tolerated, and sometimes some people would say encouraged, right? Because if there's no consequences,
exactly.
it could be encouraged. So.
Right, right.
So, okay, that's how you feel about it as a citizen of Portland. What about the restaurant world? Pricing is obviously, you know, food costs are an issue. Labor costs are an issue. What's the state of the industry in Portland? You know, years ago when I came here, I came here in 2005. I wasn't even aware of anything. But when I started to know about the industry, in 2010, the cost of entry was way lower than it would have been in Seattle or San Francisco. And that's how we ended up with some of our great chefs, because they chose, hey, I'm going to Portland. I can do this for a lot less there. Gabriel Rucker being one. Louis Lin of where I was last night, he was showing me around his beautiful restaurant. It's a beautiful spot. Like as yours is. And he said, you know, we were thinking about doing this in Los Angeles. It would have been 2.5 times the cost to open a place like this.
Oh, probably at least that much more.
Right. Way. Right. Yeah, well, that's what he was citing. He asked me, how much do you think this build out was? And I said, I'm not the guy to ask. I have no idea. But he did say it would, you know, I can see where it would be a lot more in Los Angeles or Seattle or San Francisco or even New York.
Yeah.
You would know that you were working on that. So,
yeah.
But how's the state of the industry now? You know, I'm asking you, but I miss some of our older chefs who have retired and moved on, but I'm, you know, glad places like Ken's Artisan Pizza continues and is as great as it ever was, with or without Ken Forkish. That's awesome. So I like to see things like that happen, but, it's a different world out there.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. I mean, God, like food costs in the last, especially I would say 2.5 years is just mind boggling how just unstable, but also, you know, just with inflation and just the amount of money that it costs to, you know, even buy the product now as a restaurant. It's really, really crazy. But I think, you know, the overall state of the restaurant business in Portland, I think, is doing very well. You know, there's restaurants opening constantly, for better or for worse. But I think Portland is really nice because it attracts chefs that, like you're saying, you know, are more focused on producing good food than, you know, winning some kind of like design award in a magazine, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So the resourcefulness and I guess just the adaptability of the chefs that are attracted to Portland, I think really helps with the restaurant scene staying vibrant and, you know, very just like strong, even through all of the costs with labor and food cost. So I think it's a good thing.
Do you think that the aspect of the food world that was first attractive to me and many, which was the community focus, that everybody worked together, everybody pulled for one another. Most every chef I've known has always encouraged going to other places and not their own, which was the unique aspect for me coming from Connecticut, where, you know, some chefs would have never welcomed you into their restaurant again if they knew you were going to the guy down the street all the time. Yeah. But do you feel that they can, you know, the players have changed a little bit, right? It's been years. Do you feel that that cohesive community aspect is still alive and strong in Portland?
I do. 100%. I still think it's alive. It's evolved and changed. You know, just with the stuff that I've seen and, you know, just from what I hear from other chef friends, with collaborations and pop-ups, you know, stuff like that. I think that spirit of working together and supporting each other is definitely still there. I mean, if you're going to do it in any city in America, I mean, Portland is the place to do it, because I don't think we've ever lost that perspective as far as, you know, supporting each other within the industry.
Yeah, I was curious about that. I thought Portland embodied that. That was the thing that made, aside from the creativity, right, because the cost of entry is a little lower. And I remember Ethan Stoll telling me years ago, one of the things that he was envious about with regard to Portland, and he has, how many restaurants does he have in Seattle now?
It's crazy. God, probably got like a lot. 6 or 7 at least.
At least. I bet you it's more. But so he used to say he was envious because in Portland you could let creativity run the show as opposed to investors and making sure that everything penciled out from the get-go. So you could start a restaurant with a lot of creativity, experimenting and trying different things, and people would be receptive to it too. It wasn't like it's not really a corporate clientele here. As it is in Seattle. So there's a little different perspective there. But where was I going with this? Help me out. But, creativity was key. And, collaboration is what defined Portland to help make it great. Now you've got a lot of new players who've moved in who don't necessarily know everybody. You had the days when, you know, everything stemmed from Ripe and Clark Lewis and Wildwood, right? Paley's Place. Everybody worked in those places and then went out and they all knew each other. That's not happening in the same way. I don't think. Maybe there's a lot of people at Le Pigeon. I don't know. But it's not the same. It just isn't the same.
And, you know,
Bruce isn't around.
Yeah. I think a lot of it, too, the way that it has evolved is, you know, I mean, I'm not that knowledgeable about it, but I definitely feel that social media has had a huge effect on just that, the different way that chefs are collaborating, you know, just that.
Well, that's true.
Access.
You can just pick up and share somebody's what they're doing immediately.
Right. And you can message, look at, like, if you're curious about what a chef is doing, you can go on their page or the restaurant page and you're looking and you're like, oh, like, this is pretty cool. I wonder if he or she might want to do some kind of, you know, collaboration or like work together, you know? So it's very different.
How do you view social media now? That's a good point. Is it an advantage? Is it a disadvantage? Is it both? I find it to be, I use it, but it's an annoyance that you have to do. I mean, I hate the fact that they changed all the algorithms, so everything's got to be a story now. I just like posting pictures. But now I've got to do a story, put music behind it, and become a videographer, which annoys me. I mean, I can do it, but I just like posting a picture. And oh my God, I watch people like Gary the foodie do his tags. And I'm always asking him, well, how much time do you spend tagging photos? And I ask him, is there an app for that? Can you just add tags? If someone knows of it, please let me know, because I just can't. I don't have the patience for a million tags. So yeah. Do you use it the same way? Is it? Do you find it to help you, or is it a burden?
I think it definitely helps as far as for the restaurant, you know, for exposure and just, you know, kind of putting the word out. But personally, I'm not a huge social media guy. I mean, you know, I'm on Instagram, I'm on Facebook, but, you know, I'll do a post depending on the time of year. I mean, maybe a couple of times a year. So,
then you're really not on it.
But I think overall social media is a tool now where it's, you know, if you're a restaurant, an independent one, especially, I mean, it's become a necessary, just part of
the model. Well, I guess that's
model.
That we know it's become necessary, but I guess it's better than the days where you didn't have it at all. Right. Mm-hmm. I remember when our first podcast episode had Don Barassa of Yelp. Right. So he came on and defended Yelp, but I said all the time, I said, all these, you know, a lot of chefs hate Yelp, but on the other hand, if they didn't have it, right, because that was it back in 2010, if you didn't have it, you'd have to spend money on advertising, and you wouldn't be happy about that. And in Portland, advertising doesn't look genuine, right, because you're acting like you need customers. You can't, oh, God forbid, act like you need customers. Whereas with social media, you can do it kind of organically. It's everybody's doing it. It's a little different, but you know, I used to say all the time, you can bash Yelp all you want, but the fact is people are going there. I don't know about now, but then people are going there to get restaurant recommendations. So, I think it helps you more than it hurts you. And so, I guess the same could be said for Instagram and or X or TikTok. I refuse to do TikTok, and I know I shouldn't. I know I should do it, but that's why I'm asking these questions, because it all seems like added burdens to have to learn these things.
Right.
And then watch them change the algorithms right under your nose.
Yeah, I know nothing about TikTok. So,
do you have someone at the restaurant who handles all that stuff for you?
Right now, no. We don't have like a designated person, but we are on the hunt for someone to kind of take that over. So,
you heard them. How did they contact you?
What's that?
I said, anybody listening has heard the call. How would they, what's the best way to contact you? And while you're at it, let's talk about all your places, your Instagram, your website is easy to find, but we need to spell Worsagai for people, because it took me a while to get the U in there.
Yeah.
So,
our website is worsugai.com. It's WARSUGAI.com. And, our Instagram is at WarsugaiPDX. If you are a social media person and have any interest, my email is kyo@warsugai.com. So shoot me a message.
Very good. Yeah. Very good. And, so what is the deal with, you're doing lunch now? Did I read?
We are. Yeah. We transitioned lunch, 2 weeks ago. And now we are going to hopefully go to 7 days soon. And then we are working on a late night menu for Friday, Saturday to try to be open till about 1 a.m. on the weekends.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I hope you're so successful at that you stretch it to 2 and 3 and then become,
we'll see.
You know, the leader of the pack with that. So, how are reservations going? Is it, do you need a reservation to get in? Is it, you got a lot of walk-ins available?
We do have our phone number. You can call for reservations. Right now, no, I mean, mainly, you know, if you just walk in, we'll probably have a table for you.
Okay, great. So you're not on any of the resis or any of those folks yet.
We will be shortly, but right now we don't have that set up.
Okay, great. Yeah. So, what do you see? So, All right. Last, I guess we'll wind this down by asking you, if you're coming over to the table and someone is looking at your menu and they're just a little bit, you know, obviously I'm going to, you know, it goes without saying that everything on that menu you like and yep. you think is good enough. You know, it's on there.
I love.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. You love it. But if someone's coming in and they want to have the ultimate Warsugai experience, what do you suggest they have to order and then go from there?
I would say you have to get the pot stickers is one of our, you know, really kind of trademark, I guess so far, trademark dishes. Definitely Warsugai. That's a must order. And then if I were to pick a third, it would probably be the Gampong shrimp, which is the Korean Chinese style shrimp with black pepper and honey nice. Sauce. Yeah.
All right. Well, that is a good start. And I suggest everybody go down. And you're always a bright spot in the kitchen there. And it's kind of an open kitchen, right? That was one of the, that's one of the features of the restaurant.
Yep.
Parking's pretty easy around there. So good. Thank you, Kai. I really appreciate your taking the time this morning to come on and host us a few weeks ago. That was very nice. We enjoyed that. And I wish you luck going forward. I'm sure I'll see you.
Yep. Thank you. Yeah, it was great. Pleasure as always. Thanks for having me.
You got any plans? You're going to be able to get away this summer with your son to do anything fun, travel anywhere, or do whatever he does sports-wise?
So far, no plans. But hopefully we'll have something to do this summer. Other than running a restaurant.
Well, yeah. Well, you need that. That's what I was talking about. You need some life, your work-life balance, especially when your son is the age that he is. You know, when my son was that age, just this is one of the benefits of not owning a restaurant or being anywhere near that. We took trips around the country and went to every major league ballpark two summers in a row. But when my sons were about that age. So if you can do that, that will be a life-changing experience.
Yeah.
However, there are a lot of things like that are possible for you to do, especially in the Pacific Northwest. We don't have to go far for awesome.
Right. We've got access to a lot here. So
yes, it's great. All right, man. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Chris.
I appreciate it, and good luck. We'll see you soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
Right at the Fork is hosted and produced by Chris Angeles and Court Johnson. Connect with us on Twitter and Instagram at FoodPodcastPDX or on Facebook at Right at the Fork or online at rightatthefork.com.